Come to order. Messages from the House.
February 13, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message number 325, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 19, Hospital District Election. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 41, no 17, excuse 2. The House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. February 13, 2013. From the House of Representatives, message 326, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 132, Silencers, Suppressors, and Automatic Weapons. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 44, noes 14, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February 13, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 6, Office of Consumer Advocate. Revisions, ayes 47, noes 11, excused 2. Senate File 37, Office of Consumer Advocate, Revision 2, ayes 51, noes 7, excused 2. And Senate File 91, County Commissioners, Election to Modify Numbers, ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill 11, Insurance Holding Company System Regulatory Act, ayes 52, noes 6, excused 2. Oh, February 13, concurrence passed, message number 327. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 11, Insurance Holding Company System Regulatory Act, ayes 52, noes 6, excused 2. House Bill 13, February 13, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message number 328, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill 250, Public Employee Retirement Plan. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 8, noes 50, excused 2. The House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for the final consideration by both houses. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. You want that back? February 13, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 329. Conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 250. The House conferees are Representative Harshman, Chairman, Representative Ken Escobel, and Representative Munoz. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
The Conference Committee on House Bill 250, Public Employee Retirement Plan, is as follows. Bebout, Chairman, Nicholas, and Rothfuss. Let's see, what do we have? Joint Conference Committee report. Joint Conference Committee report. Senator Hicks, are you ready on Joint Conference Committee report number one to Senate File 76?
Yes, Mr. President, I am ready.
I don't have it.
Reading clerk will read the Joint Conference Committee report.
I don't have it. Joint Conference Committee report number one, Senate File 76, Bighorn Sheep Relocation, reference House message number 309, signing for the House, Senate Representative Munoz, Goggles, and Somers, signing for the Senate, Senators Hicks, Burns, and Driscoll.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I move the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee number one report to Senate File 76, Bighorn Sheep Relocation, and vote aye. Members of the Senate, I'm glad to report back that your conference committee, by the time we got done butting heads with them folks over there in the House, we had them completely beat into submission. I would have to thank my co-conference committee members of the good senator from Devil's Tower and the good senator from Sheridan and their head-butting abilities. We did leave two provisions that the House did in there that were just grammatical changes, but the substantive change reverted back to the Senate's position. I'd ask for your favorable consideration with an aye vote.
Motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee Report number one in reference to Senate File 76, and the Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon. Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 no.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report number 1 in reference to Senate File 76. We have a concurrence. Senator Case, are you ready on message number 325 in reference to Senate File 19?
I am, Mr. President.
The reading clerk will read it in.
From the House of Representatives, message number 325, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 19, Hospital District Elections. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 41, no 17, excuse 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment.
Senator Case.
Chris Benskenhaus, Chief Clerk.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move message number 325, the concurrence report on Senate File 19, Hospital District Elections, and I would ask the Senate to vote aye. I would like to yield the rest of my time to the good sponsor who represents now part of Fremont County but from the Bighorn Basin.
Oh, didn't see you. Senator Geis.
Mr. President. I would ask the Senate to vote aye. All they did to it is on page 2, line 6. After the board shall provide a notice that will be considered, such as a resolution at least 30 days prior to the meeting at which the resolution will be considered. And I'd ask you to vote aye on that concurrence.
Any discussion? The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 19, and you've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Nicholas,
aye. Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Platern,
aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 19. Enrolled acts. Enrolled Joint Resolution 1 in reference to Senate Joint Resolution 1.
Senate Enrolled Joint Resolution 1 being original Senate Joint Resolution 1, a joint resolution opposed to amending, proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution to remove the requirement that a person be a resident of the state of Wyoming to serve as a trustee of the University of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Joint Resolution 1, the original Senate Joint Resolution 1. I have so signed. Enrolled Act Number 24, being original Senate File 6.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 24, being original Senate File 6, an act relating to public utilities.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 24, being original Senate File 6. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 25, being original Senate File 37.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 25, being original Senate File 37, and act relating to public utilities.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 25, being original Senate File 37. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 26, being original Senate File 91.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 26, being original Senate File 91, and act relating to county commission composition.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 26, being original Senate File 91. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 32, being original House Bill 13.
House Enrolled Act Number 32, being original House Bill 13, an act relating to livestock and other animals.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 32, being original House Bill 13. I have so signed. Reports from standing committees.
February the 13th, 2013. Mr. President, Committee Number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 217. Atomic Energy Act Agreement State Study. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02. Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Ruffa. Senator Hines, Chairman. February the 13th, 2013. Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 94, engrossed, immunization by pharmacists, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Anderson, 28. Senators Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 13th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 132, engrossed, chiropractor licensures amendments. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28. Senators Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 13th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 163, engrossed, adjunct professor incentives. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Barnard, Cole, Landon, and Rothfuss. Senator Cole, Chairman.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, House Bill 217, which was just read in, have an appropriation, and I ask that it be referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Without objection, House Bill 217 will be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Senator Coe.
Mr. President, House Bill 163 just read in has an appropriations, has to be re-referred to Committee Number 2.
Without objection, House Bill 160 will be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. 163, excuse me. House Bill 163 will be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. We have an additional concurrence request. Senator Burns, are you ready on message number 326 in reference to Senate File 132?
Yes, Mr. President, I am.
The reading clerk will read in the message.
February 13, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 326, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 132, silencers, suppressors, and automatic weapons. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 44, noes 14, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move concurrence on message 326 relating to Senate File 132, silencers, suppressors, and automatic weapons, and ask the Senate to vote no. For a further explanation as to the reasoning behind this request, I ask that you, I would like to defer to the good senator from Devil's Tower.
Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. President. What the House did to us over there was exactly what we spent our time debating over here. They took out trophy game animals out of the thing. They left where you can hunt, or big game animals. They left where you can hunt varmints with the silencers, but not the big game animals, and that's something that we spent a lot of time in committee, a lot of time on the floor with, and we were pretty solidly behind it, so I would encourage you to vote no, and we'll see what we can do in conference with it. Thank you.
Are you sure?
You can read it differently. I actually went back to the back deal and I with the good senator from Bags. That's when we got done reading it. That's the word I got from over there was it was all right, same as it left here. I couldn't catch that when we read it here. If you would lay it back, I guess we'll get it researched better because I hate to go to conference if we don't have to.
It seemed to me that the Summers Amendment was deleted by the Lubnow Amendment in its entirety, so it seems to me that it's in the form and fashion when it left the Senate.
Same as it left here.
Huh?
I would reverse my role then and encourage us to support the House position. And would ask the good chairman of the committee to please do so for me as well.
Senator Burns?
Mr. President, I will submit to the sponsor of the bill. I'll go whichever direction he wants me to slither.
Well, if there's any confusion, we certainly can lay it back. But my reading of this conference committee report is that the Summers Amendment was completely stricken out by the Lumbdow Amendment and returns the bill back to the way it was when it left the Senate.
Please vote yes. We won the battle against ourselves,
right? Huh? What? Senator Case.
Mr. President, if that were true, then we wouldn't have a concurrence, I would suspect. So yeah. Why don't we lay it back and double check? It wouldn't hurt anything.
Without objection, we will lay back this concurrence until somebody figures out who's on first.
Lay it back.
All right. Consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business. Consideration of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate resolve itself back into committee of the whole.
Read the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Senator Landon. Huh?
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. First bill for our consideration is House Bill 128. Reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 128, Illegal Possession of Wildlife Parts, sponsored by Representative Moniz, an act relating to game and fish. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, and Kraft. No, Senators Christensen and Driscoll. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 128, Illegal Possession of Wildlife Parts. There are no standing committee amendments on it, and for further explanation on the bill, I ask that you call on Senator Birthday Boy.
Well, Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a handout, members of the Senate, in your box. It's been there a few days because we had things kind of moved around a little bit. It's HB 128, Illegal Possession of Wildlife Parts, adds a lot to the discussion today. And I'll reference it here in just a moment because there's a map to refer to on that as well. Mr. Chairman, first a brief overview, and then I'll bring up the amendment that we have in your file as well. This bill addresses two main points, subsections C and D in 23.3.301. No one shall import into Wyoming or possess wildlife or wildlife parts from another state or country. That's on page 2, and on page 3, the violation could result in high misdemeanor. Under 23.3.303, the change addresses a situation where potentially a trophy game rack or head could be recovered if the game meat is allowed to go to waste. It's noted no person shall possess any parts of a big game animal. Further explanation in just a moment, but at this point, Mr. Chairman, could I have the amendment to be ready?
House Bill 128, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 14.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the amendment with your permission and then continue the presentation. Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 128 and ask for your favorable approval.
Any discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1? If not, question has been called. All in favor of Senator...
Mr. Chairman, could I just continue the discussion then?
My apologies, yeah. Senator. Go ahead.
That's all right. So let me explain a little more on the bill and the amendment as well. Members of the Senate, primary effort and the benefit of this is to Wyoming is that this measure would serve to prevent people from using Wyoming as a safe harbor for illegally taken wildlife. It was testimony in committee that the states that have similar statutes have helped Wyoming tremendously when a person takes wildlife and transports it into another state. You notice other states already have similar laws on your on the second page of your handout all the way around Wyoming. We're about the only state that doesn't have anything like this in our region. Typically, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will not become involved in these cases, as we've learned, because unless there's multiple animals involved or suspects, they usually don't become involved. So acknowledging the first two subsections, there is no change to the law prohibiting the live importation of wildlife, except that violations of these subsections could constitute a high misdemeanor with the passage of this bill. Now, this change allows for more discretion for the judges to use in evaluating the severity, the intent, the defendant's criminal history, and the impact to the wildlife resources. There's no minimum required, no minimum fine for a high misdemeanor, just a maximum of $10,000. Let me note, there's no felonies involved here. And finally, an example of the last changes on pages 2. In this case, where a licensed hunter during an open season, for example, takes a buck deer or a bull elk or a bull moose, and decides to leave the edible portions in the field to intentionally or needlessly go to waste, he violates the law. Now, his initial taking of the animal was legal if he was licensed, but he violates the law when he leaves the meat to rot. And currently, the law does not authorize the confiscation of the head, even if the person is convicted of wasting the game. So the changes with this bill would authorize confiscation of that, for example, a trophy game head that went out, and there was a case, and they didn't have a way to bring it back. And the reason for the amendment, members of the Senate, there was some concern in the committee that, should they get these imported, something imported that was illegal, and they ended up safe with a trophy mount in their house, and they didn't know where it came from, does that make them part of the case, the investigation, too? And so that's the reason for the amendment, where we insert the words knowingly on page 1, lines 14, no person shall knowingly import into Wyoming or knowingly possess from any source. So that's the reason for the amendment. There's an explanation of the bill, and ask for your favorable consideration.
Senator, we'll deal with the Committee of the Whole Amendment first. Is there any discussion, any questions on the Committee of the Whole Amendment? All those in favor of Senator Dockstader's motion that we adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 128, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? The Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 is passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, just some clarification here. Let's take, for example, a person who has trophy hunted over in Africa and has a large trophy room. And when they took those trophies, it was done legally, but the country has subsequently changed the laws to make half the trophy heads in his trophy room, if they were taken today, illegal. Now, he would possess those, and my question is whether or not, because the law was changed in that country, and he knew that the law were changed in that country, would those trophies at that time be subject to repossession, and would that person be guilty of a misdemeanor? Then I have another question over on page 2, subsection A. We say no person shall possess any parts of a big game animal wasted as provided in this subsection. And in this subsection, I think this kind of goes into the packing facilities. Might have maybe some conflict there. I want to make sure that I have a comfort level in this area, that it says no person shall take, leave, or abandon or allow any game animal, game fish, or game animal except trophy game animal or edible portion to intentionally or needlessly go to waste. Well, let's take, for example, you have a person that
that drops off a big game animal. And I think in this area here, you have a certain time in which you have to go back in and pick up your meat. Or it's deemed that it's you're wasting it and you've abandoned it. But at that point in time, the day after that time period expires, then the packing house is in possession of that meat. Yet this language says they can't be in possession of it, or they would be guilty of a misdemeanor. So my question would be, at that point in time, what avenue should the packing plant take, or the facility take? Should they dump it in the garbage, which is also a violation of the statute, but they can't possess it, which is also a violation of the statute? So I think there's a problem in the way that intermixes with our current statute. And so that's my question on this one here, because it seems like the packing facility, if they're in possession of it, they're in violation. If they dump it in the garbage, they're wasting it, and they're also in violation.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question, too, on page 2. When you look at line 9, subtitle A, it talks about game bird, game fish, or game animal, except trophy game animal. Then it goes further on in the new language. It says any parts of a big game animal. There's just some inconsistency there. So is there a difference between game animal or big game animal? I think there is. But which is which in this particular part of the statute?
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some concerns with the bill. As it was presented in committee, the handout you have on your desk today is a different handout than we received in committee. The handout we received in committee, the first page, emphasizes what seemed to be the nature of the request that day, and it says the Mini-Lacey Act. And what was shared with us in committee, that the general purpose for this bill is that the feds weren't using the Lacey Act, and as a result, we needed the Mini-Lacey Act so we could do the job that the feds weren't doing. And it's a challenging time when we're talking about changing duties and responsibilities and our capabilities with the budgets. And here we have a request to start taking on some of the jobs that the feds aren't doing. And it's my experience that quite often there are other reasons. When people don't do a particular thing, it may be more than they just don't want to do it. And it may be the nature of the case, it may be the facts, who knows. But I have concerns with us stepping up to fill the void on the Lacey Act when there's already a mechanism out there, there's already people charged with those duties, but we're critical of how they're carrying those duties out at a national level, and so we want to take over their job. And it seems like today, especially in light of some of the budget challenges that have been raised and addressed, that the expansion of duties, the expansion of more responsibilities, and while we had report that there's no additional staff requested, I also talked in committee a little bit about every case you take on takes a certain amount of hours. And as you take on more responsibilities, more duties, and take on more cases, something either slides to the side or you have to have more staff. And it seems like our plate's already pretty full. That's my first big concern with this bill. My second one is down on the bottom of page 1. While the amendment adds some comforting language, knowingly, that idea, when you think about visiting your neighbors, maybe some of your family members that are older and have traveled around the world, how many times in a household do you see things that might qualify for this? And do they know that's elephant ivory that they brought back or that someone gave to them? Do they know those what is it, a weasel skull is illegal. I mean, there's all kinds of things that this really starts to roll over into. And again, changing that and adding more responsibilities, taking on things the feds aren't going on, but then if you really look at how this could be applied on a personal level to someone you know, I suggest that there are people who have traveled. There are people who brought things back from other countries. And it may be those crocodile shoes. Who knows what it is? But this idea of knowingly possessing, and now you're a criminal, when maybe you weren't the one that brought it, but you took over the house. Challenges for this one.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Pretty well took away a lot of my thunder. I was going to read part of the deal. You were correct. We couldn't get any testimony in committee of any time that this would have been used in Wyoming. It was interesting. There was a lot of what-ifs. They talked about some cases out of Kansas and Nebraska that maybe, that actually were done there. The other thing this does is they got a real little small deal on their handout and says, this requires small changes. Going from a low misdemeanor to a high misdemeanor has never been a small change in my book. There's a big difference between getting prosecuted on a small misdemeanor for that elephant tusk that you knew was illegal, and you do know they're illegal. I mean, if you have carved ivory in your house, you know it's illegal now. It moves you from a small misdemeanor to a high misdemeanor, and this is serious. And these guys can come in and use search warrants. So a good senator from downriver talked about the jackbooted thugs coming in with the Department of Ag. Well, we don't need jackbooted thugs wearing red shirts coming into our house to search. If you've got a big game room, you may see them there. This bill's really is. This is not a good thing. We've not had a big rolling over occurrence of this. And the Lacey Act is the Fed's responsibility. The United States government, who has Lacey Act between game between states, we don't need this.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the black helicopters are hovering. The purpose of this statute is to, one, prevent Wyoming becoming a safe haven for poachers, and two, to provide more stringent fines for those individuals that are importing living animals into the state, such as red deer, which intermingle or can interbreed with elk and detract from the purity of the species. Some of these animals are so valuable for private game farms that they're going in the $20,000 a head. And the idea of the high misdemeanor was to increase the fine and make it, oh, it's a low misdemeanor. Who cares? If you can sell an animal for $20,000 into the state, that fine level is not significant. So that's the reason for that change in the level of prosecution, is to at least make it more stringent if you're going to bring in live animals, which is quite an important thing. And I'm concerned about the importation of live animals because of disease, parasites, interbreeding, and dealing with the purity of our wildlife. I don't know how many of you have been in Texas, but driving down the road, it looks like a African game farm. There's everything running loose. And while I don't anticipate that would happen in Wyoming, I think this is just something else that can assist the game and fish in controlling a situation that could get out of control. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, some of the testimony we had as presented for the need for this bill, if you look at the handout, you look at the second page, and you see red states and blue states, although they are not, it's not the normal political division. Those are the states, the blue states are the ones that do not have a mini-Lacey law, which basically says, and this came about because of a real-life situation where trophy elk were shot here in Wyoming. They were poached here in Wyoming, and they were taken out of the state to one of these blue states. And the Game and Fish officer was tracking them and managed to locate them down in one of these southeast states. Could prove that these were elk that were poached from the state of Wyoming. But that state doesn't have a Mini-Lacey Act. There was nothing the state of Wyoming could do about it because the state, this other state doesn't have that. And this is what we're trying to avoid, is both an elk or big game being poached in, let's say, a neighboring state, and the rack being in somebody's game room here, then the state of the other state, let's say in this case Colorado, could come in and actually prosecute the person who is possessing that rack that was poached in Colorado. Because what happened in this southeastern state with these three trophy elk that were poached in Wyoming? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. They got away with it. And whoever poached them got the money, no problem.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, I find myself on two or three different fronts here. Start with the first one. I've been using these myself. Color these up. Looks like we got a big yellow square here. We can make it turn all one color. We talk about what states hunt game. When you start comparing laws between states, Mini-Lacey Acts, they're right. They have them in some other ones. They don't match the way this bill's written. There's a big difference between how you define them. And that goes back to what we were talking about importing the living game. I'm 100% supportive of some type of amendment that says you can't bring in red deer, live stuff. I'm great with that, and I think it's necessary, it's important. But it doesn't say living game. It says any game or parts. And that means if you got a grizzly bear claw from your granddad, eagle feathers, these things are things that can be taken away from you. You can probably get them given. This turns them into high misdemeanors. And it's a whole different game when you start criminalizing these things this level. As far as the elk and the stuff that happens, those are Lacey Act violations. And the examples they used in our committee, they showed us, they handed them out to us. They got great prosecutions. There's some guys from Wyoming in jail right now over that exact same thing. The feds stepped in. They said the level was high enough. We're prosecuting. There's some guys up in Ten Sleep have spent prison time over this. The Lacey Act works. But we don't need to lower it down to a level where we got this deal. And I'll give you a little different example is, these guys tend to get kind of cranky at times. And they'll show up and they'll say, we can't bust you for poaching that elk. We know you did it, but we can get you for something else that's minor. And we're going to charge you with a high misdemeanor because we know you did it, but we can't charge you with it. So we're going to charge you with this. And you see that happen real often. And I hate to see us move it to that level on parts. I'm happy on importation of game. You know, we don't need somebody bringing in the... And that can be anything alive. Any type of stuff you can bring in, I agree with. That ought to be a high penalty, and particularly if you knowingly do it, you need to be hammered. But this deal for parts is a big stretch, and it's a new piece in the law. I really encourage you, if it can't get fixed, to vote against the bill.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, just some clarification. We're out of those 1880s where if you get across a state line, you're free and clear. You know, you can't poach in Wyoming and get to another state and not have that on your record. If there's a chargeable offense and a conviction, you're not home free. We're way past that. Now, that warrant may sit in Wyoming and you may never get to come back, but it doesn't, you know, it isn't a hands-off, you escaped and life's over. The Lacey Act still provides the availability to track people across this country. This bill came, and I suggest you look back at your handout. It's about, and the focus of it is really about, illegal possession of wildlife parts. We had no testimony that live animals were being imported, that there were any problems with that. What we had was testimony about this basically taking on what the feds aren't doing, taking a crime that might be a misdemeanor in another state, and when they bring that head in to get it mounted in Wyoming, we want to be able to charge them with a high misdemeanor. And the fact that it's a misdemeanor in a neighboring state and it comes to our state and we're going to change it to a high misdemeanor for the mere possession, seems like it's a pretty big expansion of duties and responsibilities and commitment. I'd ask you to be really careful about pushing this forward. If we get to that point, when we have those studies, we have the people say that we do have a problem with live animal importation. That's not what we heard. All the testimony in the committee was all about these critters, these bits and pieces.
Senator Dockstader.
All right, good discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Try to answer some of these. We heard the concerns. If you bring the big game parts in, do they know it or do they don't? So that's why we added, or the amendment came knowingly. Hopefully we address it with that. The question on whether it's wasted meat in the field or in the packing plant, I would be open to an amendment that would better clarify that part of it. Question on regarding the under 23303, if I was tracking right, I'm not sure that I was, Mr. Chairman. The question was leaving or abandoning any game bird, game fish, or game animals, except trophy game animals. What we're trying to do there with that wording, no person shall possess any parts of a big game animal, what they were trying to say is they can leave the animal there. They can shoot it legally because they've got the license. They leave the animal there to waste, and they walk away with that trophy game rack or that trophy game head, and there's no way to take them into the system with that. There's no way to prosecute them on that. This hopefully addresses that. I'd be open to some amending change with that. Mr. Chairman, I don't think the bill is as much concern as we think in terms of will it lead us down the wrong track. We don't have these cases now because it's so difficult to prosecute these cases. Yes, there's the federal law, but this gives us the local approach to it. This gives us more local strength. I don't think the high misdemeanor should be a concern because we've noted here. It gives us the discretion in the courts to use a better system to evaluate the severity of it, the intent, the defendant's criminal history. Some of these people, Mr. Chairman, are repeat. I can use repeat clientele. Maybe they come back and they violate the law time after time. This puts something in statute that we can take care of it. This brings it back to the local level. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, maybe we can hope that these problems will go away if we don't pass this. Well, we won't. They'll keep coming back. These problems will still be here. They'll still pack our trophy game out. They'll still violate the law. Maybe the existing things we have in place will help, but no, it hasn't in the past. Or maybe we could continue to drop tens of millions of dollars into preservation projects for the wildlife when we can do something very specific with 128 and taking care and protecting our wildlife.
Are you ready for the question on House Bill 128? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 128, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. House Bill 128 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 249. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 249, Budget Reduction Implementation, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, an act relating to the administration of government. It was referred to Committee number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Meyer. No, Senator Hastert. Excuse, Senator Perkins. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. Vice President?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee whole rise and report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 249 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment I ask to be read in at this time.
House Bill 249, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 12.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Number 1, to House Bill 249 to explain the bill and the standing committee amendment. I will yield to Senator Dockstader.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let's change subjects here for a moment. 249, budget reduction implementation. Members of the Senate, 249 addresses a reduction in the tax refund for the elderly and the payment to the counties for their county attorneys. Changes are noted first with the payment to the county and the prosecuting attorneys and their assistants, lines 2 through 5, and then with the distribution formulas on 12 through 23 of the bill. Let me move forward a little bit and take care of the Part 2 under 3911-109, then we're going to come back and address that amendment. Under 3911-109, that covers the property tax refund program, the funding formula for those 65 years of older and 18 years of old, 65 years and older and 18 years and older if they are disabled. Now, their formula is noted there, and I think rather than get into the denominators and all of that complicated talk, what this does is just provides an equal reduction for both years of the biennium. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to work in the amendment now because that was what took up most of our time in committee and the discussion, if I could, please. The amendment, members of the Senate, what we heard in testimony and we agreed to as a committee that this funding formula would better fit the needs of the counties and their county attorneys, many of you who've heard from them in just the last few days going into the weekend. Here's what the amendment does. The amendment does not change the total dollar amount of the appropriation. Rather, it changes the way the money is paid to the counties for reimbursement. The method creates kind of a peaks and valleys system, thus allowing all of the claims to be submitted in 1 year. This allows the counties to have an entire year to save for a potential shortfall, for example, that may come in year two, as opposed to taking a hit each year. The saving procedure allows the counties to have an entire year to gear up and better prepare. This final note, the counties don't budget on a two-year cycle. They budget on a one-year cycle. This system would allow them to have a year-to-year savings, in a sense, for potential shortfalls. And I might note that's kind of what we've been doing in the legislature here, is saving and preparing for any shortfalls. This is something that's done at the county level. This change, let me emphasize that again, this amendment does not change the amount of the appropriation. The amount being paid remains the same, but this allows the counties the flexibility they need. So I'd ask for your favorable approval on both the amendment and the bill, and I understand there is one more amendment coming up as well, too, Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1? Question on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 249. All in favor, please say aye. Any opposed? No. Standing committee amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Mr. Vice President?
Mr. Chairman, could you please read in this Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1?
House Bill 249, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 6.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 249. Members of the Senate, the purpose of this amendment is some of the budget reductions that we did in the budget bill had language in that budget bill to facilitate those reductions to comply with the statutes. To do it correctly, you need to change the statutes, and that's what this bill does, of course. What this does, it adds Section 2, which simply says that this act shall be given precedence and shall prevail over any other act enacted into law during the same session in which this act is enacted, to the extent that any other act is in conflict with amendments made by this act. Simply says that this will override within the budget bill. It's doing it properly. It's changing the statute. I ask for your favorable consideration of this Committee of the Whole Amendment.
Discussion on the Committee of the Whole Amendment. Do I hear a question? Question on the Committee of the Whole Amendment. All those in favor of Senator Beabout's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 249, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 is passed. We are back on House Bill 249. Discussion. Question on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Beabout's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 249. Please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. House Bill 249 has passed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 72. Would the reading clerk please read that bill?
House Bill 72, Statewide Education Accountability, Phase 2, sponsored by the Statewide Education Accountability Committee, an act relating to the Teacher Accountability Act of 2011.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Barnard, Cole, Landon, and Rothfuss, Senator Coe, Chairman.
My apologies, Senator Coe. Now, what is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 72. There is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that be read in at this time.
House Bill 72, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 4.
Senator Cole.
Mr. Chairman, we're bringing these a little bit out of sync because there's a companion bill, House Bill 91, that goes into Phase 1 accountability. This is Phase 2 accountability. We're doing that because 91 is still in appropriations and wanted to move this one forward. So I think we need to remember a couple things about what Phase 1 is and what Phase 2 is. Phase 1 involves creating a comprehensive accountability framework so that the major accountability and assessment initiatives work together coherently. Phase 1 will probably come the next couple of days in the form of House Bill 91. What we're talking about here is Phase 2, and it's focused on the design and implementation of teacher and leader evaluation systems. That's what's important. Now, at our meeting in December, due to some lack of cooperation and other things that happened, we had to delay a lot of stuff. So what we've done with this bill is we've had to delay it. What House Bill 72 does, it delays the implementation, like I just said, of Phase 2 of statewide education accountability pertaining to teacher and leader evaluations by providing a phased-in approach over the course of 4 years commencing school year 2013-14. It establishes goals and objectives for the design framework around which Phase 2 will be developed. What it does, it specifies measures of teacher and leader evaluation, including evidence of student learning, as well as professional educator practice, as organized into five specified domain areas: learner development, content knowledge and application, instructional practice, and professional responsibility. It specifies four areas of performance descriptors, including highly effective performance, performance of need of improvement, and ineffective performance. It goes on to further require a study by the advisory committee, which we reconstitute in this bill. The advisory committee keeps working, just as the select committee does. It requires further study by the advisory committee to refine and develop the Phase 2 system and to report system design recommendations to the select committee by October 15th of 2013, with select committee hopefully to forward recommendations to the 2014 legislature. The October report will set in motion a phased-in implementation plan whereby system components are piloted in accordance with prescribed timelines. Under the phased-in plan, now this is pretty important here, the leader evaluation system is finalized prior to the teacher system to enable leader participation in finalization of the teacher system. The leader evaluation system specified to be fully implemented by school year 2015-16, so we've moved that out quite a bit. And the teacher evaluation system scheduled to be fully implemented in school years 2016 and 17. So we've slowed this whole process down, realized we have to extend it out, take smaller bites out of the apple, get more done. It requires the state board to promulgate rules and regulations governing school district evaluation systems by school year 2016 and 17 for teachers and by school year 2015 and 16 for leaders with school district reporting requirements to district boards and to state boards. So this is phase two of the accountability system. Phase one will come later, as I said. We have slowed this thing down. We're taking smaller steps as we proceed through this process. We put a lot of added responsibility on the state board, and a lot of what you see in this substitute bill goes back to some of the requirements of Senate File 104. With that, Mr. Chairman, that's an explanation of the bill, and I think it'd be a good time to deal with the standing committee amendment.
Senator Coe, I guess Senator Raffis, you could move that amendment if you're going to stand on the amendment. Would you please move it?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 72 and ask the body for favorable consideration. Mr. Chairman, I'll discuss what it does. There are two effects of this Standing Committee Amendment, and they both relate to similar concepts, which is looking at teacher evaluation. Now, the background on this is when we started the Phase 2 discussion, there was a focus on teacher of record concepts. Teacher of record being taking scores that a student produces and linking those scores through some algorithm to a specific teacher so that this teacher is responsible for those scores. And when we started this process, that was the approach that we all supported. It seemed like a great idea. Here we are a couple of years later after hundreds of hours of testimony, and we've come to the conclusion that that was not such a great idea. That at a high level, it seems like a conceptually good way to go about building an education accountability system, but when you get right down to it, it's nearly impossible in any subject other than possibly mathematics to actually come up with who is responsible in some way for a specific test score. And even in those situations, based on the approach, the community approach to teaching that we have in most of our schools going on right now, where you have multiple teachers coming in and working with individual children to try and promote their learning to the best degree possible, there's no way to do that. We also heard in testimony that other states have tried these programs, and we did not hear any case or any instance where a state was successfully utilizing one of these programs in a way that people found to be equitable. Further along, we heard testimony indicating that art teachers, PE teachers, other teachers that don't have specific testable subjects, band teachers, would have to have a similar type of structure where they have a score associated with the student, but that score is going to be subjective. The system fell apart. We've been talking about it for the last couple of years, trying to find solutions, and we finally came to the conclusion the other day that it was just unworkable. So the primary emphasis of this particular Standing Committee Amendment is to remove that concept, teacher of record, as being one of the key foundations of this bill. It still is Phase 2 about educator accountability, but it removes that one-to-one test score correlation and algorithm from the approach and focuses on, as you can see in page 12 of the bill, page 12 and 13, it still discusses what the key components are going to be that have to be part of the evaluation system, but not being done through this one-to-one correlation. When you look at the bill, when you look at the amendment, Mr. Chairman, page 1 and page 2 through line 14 are just exactly what I said, going through and striking the language about teacher of record. It doesn't change anything else from a policy standpoint or make any major changes, just striking that term, which is a term of art, so that that's no longer the case. That's the first part. The second part of what this amendment does is much less significant, but another discussion that we had commonly through the course of the Select Education Accountability process was trying to come up with some systems that would work as internal assessment systems for teacher accountability. And one that we discussed several times in our Education Accountability Committee was a concept which is called 360 evaluation, 360 degree evaluation, which again is a term of art that's used in management and business communities to provide an assessment system whereby every individual has an opportunity to evaluate up their leadership and management, down the people who are responsible to them, and around them, which would be their peers at their same level. An example of that would be a situation where for you have an English teacher in an English department at a high school. Through a 360-degree evaluation system, they would evaluate all of the other English teachers. They would evaluate their principals. They might evaluate the superintendent. They would evaluate their kids, which is fairly obvious. And then they would be evaluated by all of those as part of a comprehensive system. What this second part of the amendment does, Mr. Chairman, is recommend that that be piloted by one school district next year to see if it works in a relevant manner for our accountability system. Report back to us, and you can see that on page 2, lines 15 through 20. It's nothing more than an attempted pilot based on something that the Select Education Accountability Committee thought might be a workable system for the state of Wyoming and recommended that a district use it. That's the amendment, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I hope my colleagues would help out.
Senator Schiffer.
Yeah, going to this 360-degree feedback system of squealing on people. Tell me you're going to do a pilot study, but have you defined what makes it successful or not successful? Is there any criteria, and this is a whole new management system for schools and not one which they're accustomed to my knowledge. What's going to be the criteria for success or whether you throw it out or we just wait a couple of years and when they don't use it, we throw it out or whatever?
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And at some point in time, as this bill moves through, could we have the references and the citations to the research-based research that says that this works? Because we're all about making sure if we're going to move forward in education that it's based on things that we know is proven. We know that are things that works. Certainly we wouldn't want to move down a path or a road in education where we're just trying something because we think it might work. I need to have that comfort level that everything that we're doing here, we hold ourselves to the same standards that we do the department, that everything is research-based and it's born on the concrete foundation that we know that it's going to be successful.
We're on the Standing Committee Amendment to 72. Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I will say I'm deeply disturbed by what I'm seeing in the Standing Committee Amendment. It seems to me that, I don't care whether it's a business or a school system or something, you need to have some reference back to individual responsibility for particular parts of the performance, and particularly with regard to the performance of the principals. If we're going to get away from that, are we just going to get to something that's so squishy we don't have a meaningful evaluation at all? And, Mr. Chairman, there's something we aren't doing right in this state, because we've got lots of advantages that other states have, and we're not getting the performance. And I really wonder, with these changes, are we giving up on the evaluation system and need to start thinking about radically different solutions? How are we going to get meaningful feedback, Mr. Chairman, to individuals in the education system? Because I don't know about the rest of you, but my model of the world is that people tend to stick with what's comfortable until there's hard data that says that what they're doing isn't working. In the private sector, it's pretty clear. You cease making a profit, you endanger your organization, and steps are taken. This education system is very, very different because it's much harder to measure. But if we can't get some kind of measurement back to the individual level so there is some objective data that isn't perceived as being just office politics, are we ever going to get people the kind of feedback that they need in order to know whether what they're doing is really working or not?
Senator Cole.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's why we have accountability. I mean, you know, if you're wondering where this all started, to my good tall friend from Natrona County, it all started with recalibration, and we realized that we'd put huge amounts of money into education and weren't getting the results that we wanted. So that's when our shift was to accountability. But in this bill, it specifically talks about, first of all, there's a responsibility and accountability that goes from the teacher to the principal or building administrator, to the superintendent, to the school board. I think ultimately to the parents and to the student. So in this particular bill, we do start out first by creating an evaluation system of principals and, you know, building supervisors, and then go to the teacher, where we start tying teacher performance to student achievement. Now, this is not an easy thing, because what you have in our system today in K-5, roughly, you do have a teacher of record. That kid pretty much goes in that room and doesn't move all day. But when you get up into the middle school area and the high school level, they're going from algebra over here over to a science class over here with a different teacher. And so it's just a different concept. And so we had a great deal of trouble with this. You know, it's hard. We chose to take it out, but I can assure my good friends from Natrona County that we're adamant about accountability, and we're adamant about wanting to do the right things, and we're adamant about wanting to have the best system in the country, and I hope that answers some of your questions.
Let's go to Senator Schiffer first, and then we'll come back to the minority floor leader.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to pursue that thought a little further. And I understand the complications as they get higher up junior high or high school. But if it's impossible to track a teacher of record, did you discuss backing up and saying, okay, that principal is responsible for putting together a complete program? But so long as we're not going to hold anyone accountable, nobody's accountable. That's one of the things we bumped into years ago, and I'm trying to figure out, I think we just gave up the battle, it looks to me like, other than the 360 degrees, which means even if they surround us, we'll keep fighting.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, and Senators, if I implied that we were taking the principals off the hot seat in any way, that's not correct. The phase two is specifically teacher of record, tying the teachers. The principals are at the school level. Phase one deals with the school level, and there is still just as much pressure we'll see in phase one when that comes forward as there was before. It's fairly easy to take these test scores and link them to a school or even a class aggregated to some degree. But it's that saying, this is the teacher that's responsible for Timmy in almost any grade at this point. You know, my kids are in first and third grade. They learn reading from a different person than they learn math from a different person than they learn music, etc. So even in elementary school at this point in time, I wouldn't know who to give as the teacher of record for my children in mathematics. It even changes from week to week. That's the concern that we have. So with regard to the principal level and the school level, there's still going to be just as much tie-in and buy-in, for that matter, as there was previously. So there's no changes there. It's just that aspect of the teacher of record. With regard to the research basis for these various pilots, I appreciate that comment. It's certainly very important to always have sound research supporting any of these things and good science. I'll provide a tall stack of journal articles specific to this type of management and give that to the good senator from Goshen County. Giving a little more detail on page 15, Romanette number 1, as it is prior to the amendment, it encourages districts at this time in the House bill that we're working on, 72 here, it encourages districts to come up with pilot programs for evaluation, recognizing that we want to hear feedback. And to the good senator from KC, it's basically just feedback. There's no success level or criteria or any standards being drawn up. It really is trying to get the state to begin to do a little bit of experimentation. We have what we call Chapter 29 rules, which is an evaluation system already in place. We are encouraging through this legislation districts to start saying, well, we've got a better idea. Let's try this. And then other districts will try something else,
and then they're going to come back and report and say, this worked pretty well, this didn't work well, and honestly, we're not going to have any objective measure, we're just going to have to trust them. That's what it's going to come down to, and we'll try and pick the best components and put something together that's useful. The amendment just proposes one particular system, which has been effective in industry and might be effective in our schools, and recommends that a district try that. It's nothing more than that. It's not mandating it for all districts, but hoping that one district might try that because it's a suggestion that we've tossed around in our committee is a total quality, kind of a total quality management approach. And to the good senator from Natrona County, I believe I've addressed some of your concerns as far as making sure that we are still holding accountable schools and still holding accountable the teachers, but not through this direct individual score going to the teacher fashion. So I may have misled you in the previous speech into implying that there wasn't any accountability, but in fact, there's still the same intent of the legislation. It's just that one of the methods we were proposing, based on testimony over the last 2 years, is not a reasonable approach, as it turns out. And if the body goes and talks to the principals, talks to your teachers, talks to the people in your own community, and asks them what they think, regardless of the level of whether or not a teacher of record is appropriate, I would expect nearly unanimous response that it's not a workable solution, because we certainly heard it as a nearly unanimous response over the last 2 years.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on and against the Standing Committee Amendment, I remain deeply concerned that we are going away from seeking to have some kind of objective data, particularly, Mr. Chairman, as it applies to the principal level. I can see some of the arguments with the way teaching is done these days with regard to that we need to redo the teacher of record concept. But the principal should be responsible for what goes on in the building, for giving us a result. And organizing the teachers to get that result, seeing that they are doing it. Somebody's got to be responsible. Otherwise, the whole thing just turns squishy, if you will, and nobody is responsible for it. And what nobody's responsible for isn't going to get done well. And I remain deeply concerned with the approach here. I think you need some kind of objective data that does come back, and I think we would be better to defeat the Standing Committee Amendment and see if we can't come with a bit better approach that does seek to collect data, at least at the school level.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All right. To clarify in very certain terms, this amendment does not change principal evaluation in any way. It does not change data collection with regard to a principal in any way. It does not change data acquisition with regard to a school in any way. And there is no intent to do that in any of the forthcoming amendments or in Education Accountability Number 1. So I hope that clarifies the concerns for my good colleague from Natrona County. I don't know which point is giving you the concern in terms of the language of the amendment, but that's definitely things that go bump in the night. There's nothing there that does what you're concerned about, to the best of my knowledge and to my hope.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, looking at the amendment, page 1, lines 38 through 41, that strikeout, data systems linking student achievement. Okay, I understand what you're saying about teachers of record, but then it says, and relevant school principals. And I don't know how to really divide that out and make it work. I think what you're doing is removing the data that allows you to be objective, and then it gets to be all subjective opinions and office politics. And, you know, I'm no expert in the total area here, But it seems to me, Mr. Chairman, that that's fundamental. And so that's why I urge defeat of the Standing Committee Amendment.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I join in the concerns articulated by my colleague from Casper. And I'm not certain why you necessarily make the assumption that the teacher of record has to be the teacher of record for the entire school day. I would hope that when we're talking about accountability, we reach a point to where if your child is his teacher, he might have four teachers of record in different categories. And as we go into high school and other areas, there needs to be a teacher of responsibility. Change the name. But there needs to be some mechanism where, you know, if you've got teachers team teaching, but one teacher saying, I'm not prepared to be part of the team, and those students are not performing as well, we need to know that. And it seems to me that, you know, this was not part of the interim work. It's a new concept being brought in later, but perhaps the solution is not to eliminate the accountability and trying to find links to performance of individual teachers, but rather disassociate it so you make sure that you are, in fact, tracking performance by the teacher who is moving through. And I think, like I say, I think that there's no reason why you couldn't have your teacher of record for that particular subject. And when we talk about, well, the assumption is you're going to have the same teacher for all classes, even K through 3, I agree, that's not going to happen. You're going to team teach, you're going to move people up into reading groups, you're going to move math groups. But at the end of the day, we need to make sure there's some methodology where teachers who are teaching, there's a link between student performance for that particular subject and the teacher teaching that subject to that student.
Senator Anderson, 02.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is a very complicated subject, and I hear two kind of concerns going on here, not two arguments. If, in fact, the concern that the good senator from Natrona County expresses in the fact that if this amendment does remove any obligation on the part of an administrator, I don't think that's the intention of the amendment. And so if we track that back through and somehow the administrative record has been taken out, that should, I think, be corrected. I don't think that there was any intention to do that. As far as the teacher of record, I taught in the middle school for a long time, also taught in the primary, taught in high school, taught at all levels. The way that you work in these systems are quite different, probably somewhat easier in a typical self-contained primary school to get the teacher of record and the accomplishments of those students. You can compare those and you can get a pretty accurate, pretty accountable, pretty realistic expectation. You can probably go to the high school and you can assess the mathematics teacher and those students that he has from algebra or whatever, get a pretty accurate record. But when you get to a middle school, like I taught in, say for an example, it would be like saying looking across this room and you pick a bill out that has passed an enrolled act. Every one of you had some part in construction of that bill. But how do I give you a grade? Can I give the sponsor a grade? Can I give those who voted against it a grade? How do I give those people in the committees a grade? It all kind of runs together so that when we get whatever comes out at the end, we're all pretty much responsible for. So who's going to be held accountable at a higher level? The legislature. I'll just simply say in regard to a school example, 20 students, 4 teachers. They sit down, they evaluate the students, they do that by subject matter, they might do it by interest, and then they assign them to a teacher for, say, 6 weeks or perhaps a quarter. Students spend that time with the teacher, then they come back, they look at the assessment, and they reshuffle. They go to another teacher. And they're taught in areas of interest, they're taught by their abilities, they're taught perhaps by a subject, and they're perhaps reading in the content area, math in the content areas, and so it's really
difficult to sit down. And during that day where they had four different academic teachers, they probably went to art, PE, music, probably saw a counselor. Maybe they went to a special interest and spent some time with a coach. How do you assess who the most important person was in that? So having said that, it's going to take us time to get there. Now, I don't know how you put all that in law that we went through time, see how we can do it in the primary, how we can do it in the middle school, how we can do it in the high school. I think we can get there. First of all, we can use the administrators of record as a beginning, and what we learn from that, then we can work down on. But it's going to take a tremendous amount of input, I think, from local school districts, from teachers and administrators and others in order to do that. But whatever the system is, it has to be, I think, accurate, it has to be effective, and it has to be objective. And so I think what we're saying here, the whole essence of this bill, as we need, if not a timeout, let's just hold the phone here. Let's take our things a little bit slower and give us some time to work into it. And then we can have these conversations as to how we approach teacher of record in the primary, teacher of record in the middle school, teacher of record within the subject of. But we're just asking, I think, what this is, that this is going to be difficult. It's going to take us some time. And it's going to take all of us in order to do it. I don't think teacher of record is necessarily being thrown out permanently. I just think it's going to take us a while to get there. And it's going to take a lot of work in regard to the research, but it's going to take a lot of work in regard to how we do this locally. But in no way, and I think we're on the amendment, if not, I'll speak to the amendment, in no way is there an intention on the part of this amendment to remove the administrator of record. But I think the intention is just to say, let's just pause for a little bit with the teacher of record. It's a very complicated thing. Still want to do it, but we don't know quite how at this point. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Let's go to Senator Cole first, and then I'll come back to the majority floor leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's fair. To alleviate the concerns of my good friend from Natrona County, I would draw attention to page 5, if you would, if you look in the bill, paragraph XXX. And it says that not later than school year 2015-16, each school year thereafter, in addition to these paragraphs, require the performance of each school district leader, including superintendents, principals, and other district or school leaders serving in a similar capacity, to be evaluated in accordance with statewide education accountability. I hope that answers your concerns. It's right there. I think that's why we took it out in the standing committee, man, why we struck the language. If you have any further concerns, I'd try to answer those for you.
Mr. Majority Forty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we're all talking about the same things. We have the same concerns. And I think we all understand generally the difficulty in this. But I think what, as I've listened to my colleagues, I've said, look, we all agree that there's a series of building blocks that you need to achieve in order to do well later on. So if you want to take calculus and succeed at calculus, you really needed to have that training starting in first grade. You can't leave all your math until high school and start then and expect to do well in calculus. But having said that, everybody that takes a calculus test throughout our class through Wyoming ought to have certain skills that you develop while taking that class. Now, we've decided we didn't want to do end-of-course exams, and there are reasons for that. But I think part of the data collection was, and the building of the model as we move forward, is that the challenge was, how do we solve that problem? And if the challenge is, we know the difficulty in that you have multiple teachers and folks teaching you along the way. But our challenge is, if you miss one of those building blocks because that particular teacher is not performing to grade, having a bad year, or particularly if there's a systemic problem with that classroom, it needs to be taken care of. We've talked about this before. You can't afford to have two or three classes moving through one teacher. And the principal needs to have a mechanism where he's taking specific teachers performing certain classes for students and saying, are you up to grade? And I think we need to do the disconnect between the teacher of record being your only teacher for the day. And what I hear the colleagues talking about is the concern that we're telling ourselves we're just not going to tackle this challenge until some later date. I think we're more anxious to get this process going forward. We're anxious to have an accountability system where the principals are required to monitor each class, each teacher, and the students performing out of those to make sure that the students are performing well in that particular class. Because as a parent, you can't afford to have one building block just drop out because we have no accounting system. And so I think the solution is there. I'm kind of in agreement that just to say, well, it's too challenging and we're not going to address it, but we'll come back and do it later is sort of like having cold soup.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader, I might go to Senator Scott first and then back to you.
And Mr. Chairman, I understand the material that was cited that's on page 5 of the bill. It makes sense to me. But what I'm concerned about is that the Standing Committee amendment removes the possibility of getting some objective data on which to base the assessments. And I think that's very important. If you don't have something like that, you get all kinds of problems with personalities getting into it, with various prejudices, and I think you need something objective so that as you're trying to evaluate the principals and ultimately the teachers, you have the greatest degree of objective evidence. And what I say to various teachers is there's no shame in finding out that the performance hasn't been good enough. The shame is in not doing something about it and trying to fix things. And I think most people, whether you're in business, whether you're in one of the professions, whether you're in this profession, the teaching profession, you need some objective feedback so that you're on your toes and give your best performance. And just in the human nature, if we don't have that objective feedback, Mr. Chairman, we don't perform at our best. And I'm concerned that the Standing Committee Amendment, not the bill, the Standing Committee Amendment, removes an attempt at getting the data that we need.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To address the last point first, this is one instance of that phrase where we link it to principals. This isn't even the bill that really does that. That's accountability one, phase one. It was a reference that was brought back into this to strike the small amount of language regarding linking student achievement with teachers of record. I believe the amendment was drafted this way because it just doesn't read very well if you leave in the other part of the language, whereas if you strike the entire clause, it indicates that you would be looking at using existing data to establish longitudinal data systems as necessary for the statewide education accountability system. Now, Mr. Chairman, remember the statewide education accountability system includes evaluation of the principals and evaluation of the teachers. So it's not restrictive. It really is just removing this teacher record concept. Now, we've got a lot of other statute that has to be considered. It's not just this one paragraph that the entire accountability system hinges upon. If that was the case, then I, too, would have concerns that we might be removing something important. But to the extent that we have another bill, other statutes, we've passed two in the past, I'm very confident that we're still going to be holding the principal of record responsible for the test scores that will be going to that school and properly attributable. So I remain convinced, Mr. Chairman, that the concern expressed by the good senator from Natrona County is not a concern that we need to be worrying about based on the other legislation that's in place. Now, with regard to the concerns of the good majority floor leader, my colleague from Albany County, it's not just a matter of can we do this and this is too hard. What we've heard in testimony is that it would be detrimental to the education of the students to do this. We heard a great scenario where you have several teachers that are team teaching. They're responsible for teaching a group of kids, and they'll divide those kids up in this way. They'll take the most challenging and difficult students, the ones that are struggling the most, and they'll give them all to the best teacher. That's good teaching. The students that already get it don't need the best teacher at that time. They need to sit quietly and do some reading, figure things out, and move along. Now, we heard in testimony that that is the A game of our education system. That's what we do when we're doing it best, and that's what we're trying to move towards. And we heard in testimony that if we have a teacher of record in place, we will not be doing that any longer. We've heard other examples of how it would be detrimental to our education system. Not just difficult. It is difficult. That's another problem, right? It would be very, very challenging to achieve this system that would then be detrimental to our children. So it's sort of two-sided, right? It would be a hard task, and then it would be bad. I think those two, either one independently, is probably justification to pass this amendment. But when taken together, are very compelling. And again, Mr. Chairman, I'll reiterate, this was unanimous out of our committee based on years of testimony and based on virtual unanimity of educators, administrators, and superintendents, high school board associations, everyone else, indicating to us time and again that this sounds great. It would be a lovely system, but it hasn't worked in other states, and it's not going to work here. I'd encourage the body to adopt the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're ready for question on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 72. All those in favor of Senator Rothfuss's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 72, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please rise. Standing committee amendment has failed. We are back on the bill. We do have a committee of the whole amendment number one. If the reading clerk would read that in, excuse me, Senator Schiffer.
Next amendment. And my concern with this bill is, that what we're doing is we're delaying everything. We're eliminating, well, actually, we didn't eliminate it because it failed, but we're eliminating some areas of study, some areas of exploration, some areas of accountability. But the other thing we're doing is we're delaying everything. Now, we just went there's all these other bills out there, but we went through a lot of anguish because somebody was delaying things. And we took some monumental action because somebody was delaying things, not going the right direction. Now we're coming back on one of the two accountability bills and saying we're going to time out. We need a couple more years to mill around smartly in the classroom. That's fundamentally wrong. What you're doing is you're sacrificing those kids coming through. And whether they're first grade and second grade, we're going to say for another 2 years, there's going to be no accountability in your education. That's fundamentally wrong for those kids. Now, if somebody's got to take a time out, you know, give them a 15-minute recess, but not a 2-year time off. I'm very nervous about the direction we're going, particularly considering the action we took earlier in this session.
Would the reading clerk please read in Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, and then we will ask for discussion on that and the bill.
House Bill 72, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 3, line 10.
Senator Cole.
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. What this does, it goes in on page 3. That's where we do rule and reg for performance evaluation systems and puts in some more language, I guess, that our new director wanted and the advisory committee wanted, and it has to do with providing criteria and rules for a system to enhance the system under professional development as we strive to tie teacher performance to student achievement. I'll emphasize that it was requested by the advisory committee, and I want to say one thing about the amendment. If you look at it, the last sentence, the system shall also allow districts opportunity to refine the system to meet the individual needs of the district, and shall goes on from there. So those that like local control should like this amendment. I'd ask that you approve.
Discussion on the committee of the whole amendment number 1. Do I hear question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 72, please say aye. Any opposed, nay. The amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. I can wait to on the bill itself. And did not go without notice that the folks on the Education Committee felt very strongly about the amendment that was killed, and they stand in unanimously, and they feel strongly with that. But, you know, I would say this, folks. Data doesn't scare any of us, and I don't think we ever ought to have a situation where we're promoting the cherry-picking of students, putting the best teachers with the best students when maybe you need the most skilled teachers with the students that need the most help. And frankly, I think we're all capable of understanding data, and the districts are capable of explaining it. And that's a good process. The real concern, the fear is that when you have a child that you know is underperforming, and there's no way to demonstrate it. There's no way to go to the principal or to the teacher and say, look, you're slacking, or have somebody intervene at that level. And if you're a parent who's experiencing one of those, and you've got a one-year situation where a child's sitting there, and maybe it happens 2 or 3 years in a row, there ought to be some much quicker remedy. So the challenge is for the committee to come back and refocus the amendment. I don't think we're disregarding your recommendations or the committee's recommendations, but we're simply saying we're capable of receiving data, interpreting it, and making good decisions once that's received.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Cole, would you like the committee of the whole amendment number 2 to be read in?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chairman.
Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 72, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2, to engrossed copy, page 6, line 9.
Senator Cole.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2. This just goes in and cleans up some language that we never shifted back over. If you remember, the performance labels that we have in there now are highly effective, effective, in need of improvement, and ineffective. And so in a couple of places in the bill right now, we still have the word inadequate. And we still have the word unsatisfactory, and we have done away with those labels. This is just a corrective amendment.
All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt Committee the Whole Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 72, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? That amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Are you ready for a question on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 72, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
Nay.
House Bill 72 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 81. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 81, Large Project Funding, sponsored by the Select Natural Resource Funding Committee. an act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Funding Act. It was referred to committee number 6. Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resource reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, Kraft, and Driscoll. Senator Burns, Chairman. It was sent over to committee number 2, Appropriation, referred back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Haster, Meyer, and Perkins. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Have I really? Mr. Chairman, may I have privilege of the floor before I move the bill?
Senator, you may.
Just, Mr. Chairman, members of the body, just a little good news. You know, quite often we're here dealing with the problems of state and state government and so forth. Some news that just came to me in the last few hours within my the purview of my committee, among other things, are cultural resources. And the American Alliance of Museums has accredited the Wyoming State Museum. And out of the roughly 17,500 museums in the United States, only 780 are accredited. That's less than 5% of all the museums in the nation. And I think they deserve a lot of credit for that. It's quite a shot in the arm. And I think it speaks well to those people who run that museum and curate that museum that it gets that reaccreditation. I think there's only about 5 in the state that get it. And when you think about some of the museums we have in the state, especially up, for instance, in Cody Country, to be in that stratosphere of museums is impressive.
Thank you for sharing that, Senator.
With that, Mr. Chairman, I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 81, Large Project Funding. There is a standing committee amendment that I would ask be read in now.
House Bill 81, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engross copy, page 33, line 20.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the standing committee amendment. And with that, actually, I'll explain it quickly, and hopefully we can dispose of it, because it has nothing to do with the substance of the bill. It is merely a typographical error that's being corrected in the amendment. So unless there are any questions, I would ask for a vote on the Standing Committee amendment.
All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 81, please say aye. Any opposed, nay? We're back. That has passed. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Senator Burns. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For a further explanation of this bill, I would ask that you call on the chairman of the Select Natural Resource Funding Committee.
Chairman Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, has House Bill 81 been moved?
It has, Senator. Okay.
Members of the committee, I'm just going to give you a recap of this. As we go through this, I just want to remind you that this is only the portion that the trust fund deals with. It's the large projects. There was 87 applications this year. The board funded 72 of those applications, and of those 72 applications, you're going to see 19 of them that qualified for a large project funding this year. Of that 19, 4 of those are just continuation projects. I would remind the body that as we go through this and you see the appropriations, this money was appropriated last year to the board. This is an allocation of an already existing appropriation. But with that, let's just jump into the 14 large projects that we're going to deal with, or the 19 this year. The first one is the Alexander Ranch conservation easement. It's located in Sublette County. There's an allocation of $625,000. That resulted in a 3-2 leverage between state money and total cost of that project. The second one is the Wood Ranch that's located in Crook County. There's a grant of $300,000 for that. Leverage was 5.5 on that. The next one is the Arrowhead Ranch easement, if you follow me through the bill. That is in Natrona County. There's a grant of $833,333 for that project, resulting in a 3-2 leverage. The next project is the Wilson Ranch easement. That is in Crook County. It has a grant of $606,385. The leverage on that one was 3.3. The next project is a continuation project, Bighorn River Invasives 2. That is in Hot Springs County. That has a grant of $160,000. The leverage on that was 2.8. The next project is the Cabin Ranch Conservation Easement. That project is in Sublette County. It's got a grant of $500,000. Leverage is 3.2 on that. Next project for consideration is the Culbertson Place easement. That one is also in Sublette County. It's a grant of $385,000. Leverage is 3.2 on that one. The next project is the Rolling Thunder easement. That is also in Sublette County. Has a grant of $425,000, leverage of 3.9. Next project under the large projects is the Barnes Ranch easement. That is in Lincoln County with a grant of $300,000 with a leverage rate of 3.2. Next project is the Red Creek easement. That is a grant for $625,000 in Sweetwater County. The leverage of 4.5 on that. The next project is another continuation project working on range improvements. It is in Sweetwater County. It is a grant of $339,170. The next one is the Munger Mountain easement. It's a grant, $600,000 with a leverage of 9. That's in Teton County. Next one is East Grovant Butte easement. That's again in Teton County for a grant of $600,000, the leverage of 11.8. The next one is the Charlie Ball Place easement. It's in Sublette County. Has a grant, $265,000, a leverage of 3.6. Next one is the Bar 1 easement, which is in Carbon County. Has a grant of $825,000. Leverage on that one's 5.9. The next large project under this bill is a Cottonwood Ranch Habitat Improvement Project. That is in Sublette County. That is $209,735 with a 4.2 ratio on the leverage on that. Next one is the Jawbone Gulch easement. That is in Laramie County. It's a grant of $250,000 with a leverage of 8.9. The next one is another one of the continuation projects in Carbon County. Has a grant of $35,000 with a leverage of 2-1. And then the final project for your consideration under the large project bill this year is Little Snake Fish Passage. That has a grant of $200,000 for a leverage of 8. And that is in Carbon County also. With that, members of the body, I'd stand for any questions.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just more of an informational thing, and I want to be sure that my colleague agrees with me, and I just want to bring this into perspective. And that during this last biennium, we allocated $24 million for these projects, $10 million general fund, $6 million AML, and $8 million from the interest on the trust fund itself. And I've spoken with Mr. Budd that runs this, and it looks like because of what's going on with the national funding levels to NCRS, I think, or whatever it is, that they have now changed that and the funding's not available. So what do you anticipate from your perspective we're looking at for funding in the year 15-16?
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I can speculate, but I'll go through what I think's out there. Is I think we're going to continue to see these federal funds start to dry up. Keep in mind there's fewer easements in this year than there was last year. as those federal dollars continue to dry up, you're going to see less ability to do these conservation easements. And that's the picture out there at the federal level. I do think we're going to come back and you'll see a request for an appropriation to continue the project funds. For the last couple of years, there's been some general fund money on a biennial basis put in there to cover some of the project level activities specific to that. But really at this point in time, to try to determine what might happen a year from now as far as appropriations to deal with the Farm and Ranch Protection Program would be a little bit speculative. We just don't know what the feds are going to do. The Farm Bill hasn't been passed. There's been a lot of talk back there to consolidate a lot of their type of easement programs. Until we have some direction from the feds, we just don't know where we're looking at down the road as far as that program and what that may or may not bring to the state of Wyoming.
Any more discussion? Any questions on House Bill 81? Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 81, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. House Bill 81 has passed Committee of the Whole. We are to House Bill 86.
Mr.
Majority Floor Leader.
I'm just curious, with respect to that last bill, I know that the commission would have had big glossy notebooks on each one of those easements that you would all have seen as a committee. Do you know whether that was is on the Internet or is linked anywhere? Pardon?
Mr. Chairman, I didn't hear the question.
The question is, and we've had two bills now where we had the water bill, where you'd have dams and reservoirs, and we had this bill where you had probably an extensive, just a notebook you might have as a committee received. Do you know whether that got linked in or scanned anywhere on our Internet or on the public website?
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I am not aware that that has been scanned in, but I think that's something we could certainly do.
I didn't mean to slow things out, but I did want to, this is about the third bill where we had committees that had significant work. They had large presentation from their subcommittees, and what we needed to figure out as a group is how to get those scanned in so that we're sitting here and you can link to it and actually go to the photographs. And typically we might have gotten in the interim, each one of us from the wildlife or the board, that presentation, but just a heads up, I think we need to, when we go in the next sessions, figure out how we can get these things linked in so you can call them up on your computer as you do the descriptions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Anything we can do on second reading, I would sure encourage that. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 86. Would the reading clerk please read in the bill?
House Bill 86, Child Placement Orders. Sponsored by the Labor Committee, an act relating to the Child Protection Act. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Excabel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, I move it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 86, Child Placement Orders. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd like it read in at this time.
House Bill 86, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 2.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and at this point, I'd like to move the standing committee amendment, and I'll deal with it as we work through the bill. Mr. Chairman, what this does, this bill was looking at placement of children in what are known as psychiatric residential treatment facilities. And these are children that have diagnosed psychiatric problems. They're in some way or another, have bumped in, gotten in trouble, been drawn to the attention of the courts, We're talking about juvenile courts here. And what was happening is, if a child is sent to a psychiatric hospital for medical reasons, they qualify for Medicaid. In other words, the state and the federal government splits the cost. If they are sent to an institution by a judge, that is a sentence, and they are not eligible for Medicaid. There are relatively few of these children out there, but the expense is quite high. It runs somewhere around that $4 million a year total expense, and that's just the half of it for a biennium. So what we are trying to do is figure out how we can cost shift, keeping in mind the best interests of the child, so that those children will be eligible for Medicaid. What we found is the federal government says at any point, if the judge names the institution they're going to, then they are not eligible for Medicaid. That falls under a sentence. So the trick was, we wanted to have judges not do that anymore if it was appropriate. Somehow, things kind of fell apart a little bit between DFS and Department of Health and the county attorney and the district attorney. And if any of those orders named the institution, we were not eligible for cost share. So what this bill does, and I've got the numbers here if you want to see them. I don't think there's much point on dwelling what went on in the past. I think this bill resolves the problem. What we did, and Mr. Chairman, the other thing, the language is very, very specific. And I've got for this week what the federal language is. But when you're dealing with CMS, one of the things we found out, CMS is the federal agency that pays the bills for Medicaid, that they are not adverse to changing their mind or being recalcitrant. But what we did in visiting, we had judges, we had both agencies, and sat down and worked through this to make sure we were going to do it right in the future. And so now I'm going to actually deal with the standing committee amendment, because that's what's left of the bill. We go in, Mr. Chairman, on page 1 and on line 2, we delete providing that the court ordering, and we add the words limiting the scope of orders for psychiatric residential treatment, and that's what we're doing in the bill, and that's all we do in the bill. We tell the judges their people, and we've told their people, and again, I'm over on page 2, line 7, the new language will read, any order regarding potential placement at a psychiatric residential treatment facility shall not specify a particular psychiatric residential treatment facility or level of care for the placement of the child. In other words, you can't name it in the court order. What in fact they'll do, they'll take the recommendation of the multidisciplinary team into account, the recommendation of DFS, and they'll either say, I go along with it, or I don't go along with it. If they don't go along with it, then they can remand it back to the multidisciplinary team or whatever they want to do, as long as they don't put the name of the institution in that court order. Actually, it turns out that the district attorneys and the county attorneys are the ones that write the court order, but I think we've got all the district court judges on board. They are going to screen them very carefully to make sure they comply with this statute 14.3.429. Now, the same applies 14.3.429. That's the Child Protection Act. Exactly the same language goes over to the Juvenile Interstate Compact, and this is on page 3, 14.6.229. And exactly the same language goes over to the CHIN statute 14.6.429. We repeat that language over and over. So, in fact, we've repeated it 3 times, so everybody's going to bump into it at some one time or another, and this problem will be solved, and we'll never have to worry about it again. So I would ask for a consideration of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 and answer any questions.
Not questions?
Any questions, I ask for the question.
Any questions, comments on Standing Committee and Amendment Number 1? Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt Standing Committee Number 1 to House Bill 86, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I'll try and answer any questions on the bill. Hearing no questions, I'd ask for the question.
Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report and to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 86, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. House Bill 86 has passed. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 100. The reading clerk, please read the bill.
House Bill 100, Vehicle Registration Fees, Assistive Devices, sponsored by Representative Stubson, an act relating to vehicle registration fees. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Kleteren, Senator Von Kleteren, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Kleteren?
Mr. Chairman, since you're in the chair, I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a do pass, 100 Vehicle Registration Fees Assistive Devices. And fellow senators, what this bill does and what has been unevenly applied across the state is they've considered the price of assistive devices into the value of a car when you register it. So lifts for wheelchairs, hand controls for those that don't have the use of their legs when they drive a car. They've considered those as part of value, and the lowers have been considered and the value that you have to pay to register that vehicle. What this bill does is remove that value that you've paid for that assistive device from the price that they are going to consider for your registration fees. And so it goes on to page 2, lines 11 through 18, and describes what an assistive device is. And page 6 and 7 of page 2, line 6 and 7, states the factory price shall not include the value of any assistive devices. The county treasurers that were there in the meeting were all in support, and we had a lot of good testimony from those that have these kind of vehicles. So if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer it. Otherwise, I'd call for the question.
Any questions on House Bill 100? Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand what the bill does, and I understand why they may want not want to do it, but I don't understand why. Why are we doing it?
Because
Senator Von Kleteren.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and the good senator from Riverton, originally they were in there, and some treasurers were not putting it in. Some were considering it as the value of the vehicle, and it was a request of the treasurers, as well as some people that have paid for this, have paid the tax on it, that this be removed. At present moment, if you have a permanently affixed piece of equipment to a vehicle, it is considered in the registration fees. They've asked that this be removed. It fits with our handicap parking and everything else, so we're asking that it be stated.
Mr. Vice Chairman, President. Just instead of removing it, why didn't you ask them all to include it then?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Von Kleteren.
Thank you. And that's a very good question. I think it was done more out of the fact that there's a small minority of handicapped individuals in this state and that this was more of a burden than needs to be applied to them, especially those that are buying what they absolutely have to do and really stretching themselves to do that, and that was the request.
Senator Cooper.
Also, Mr. Chairman, as part of that in the committee and testimony we heard is, you know, that it's far better to be able to keep these folks as mobile as possible, being able to drive their own vehicles and get around as much as they can on their own without having to have some sort of a program to help these people drive. And this just allows them a little bit of a deduction so that they can purchase this equipment. Some of this equipment costs more than the vehicles do. Some of it, we've had testimony, costs as much as $25,000 for some of this equipment that's put on there. So it's kind of to help them to just be able to get around and keep them more mobile in our society.
Senator Burns.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think the Vice President has a good point. And I think it was rather reinforced by the chairman of Transportation Committee. These vehicles are, because of these devices, worth a lot more and are heavier because of a lot of these devices worth and put wear and tear on the road. So if I'm going to buy, let's say, a little compact car versus getting a Cadillac, I should be willing to pay the difference in the ongoing registration. And a lot of these assistive devices actually, but at the same time, when I sell my Cadillac, it's worth a lot more than my little compact car was when I sell it. These vehicles are worth a lot more when they're sold down the line. So I'm kind of wondering, I've got the same question the Vice President does. Why are we suddenly giving a discount for something, for a vehicle that's actually worth quite a bit more?
Senator Cooper.
Well, in answer to that, I believe the consideration is the fact that there's a very, very selective market for these types of vehicles. A lot of them are custom-built for the individual that the vehicle is being used for and may not even work for another individual out there without being either remodified or not used at all. So it's a very selective market out there for these types of vehicles. So, you know, it was just a gesture on our part to help these type of people that have these handicaps to be able to get around and be able to also purchase these vehicles at an extremely high cost.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, the other thing is because these devices are so specialized, in fact, you don't sell them with your automobile. You take them out, and if you have to trade vehicles, you put it in your new one. They're most of them are built specifically for the handicap that individual has. And quite often, that apparatus or combination of apparatus is worth way more than what the vehicle is. We heard some testimony to that. That these things are really expensive, they're really specialized, and the other thing is that keeps these people, in many cases, empowers them to hold a job, to have a profession, whatever they want to do. They're out there, and this is the kind of thing that allows them to do that.
Senator Esquivel.
Mr. Chairman. Yes, as has been mentioned, these devices are, you know, wheelchair lifts and things of that nature that are especially equipped for people with multiple sclerosis, people that have been paralyzed. And actually, when you stop to think about the service that is provided by giving a little bit of a financial break for individuals that have to, I mean, the devices themselves cost more than the cars do in many cases. But it enables them to keep out of possibly having to go to a nursing home or assisted living or maybe even worse, a facility that requires a lot more intensive care. Because you can well imagine anybody that has a severe disability, loss of limbs, things of that nature, takes quite a bit to take care of these individuals. The caretakers themselves need these devices in order to not hurt themselves so that they can provide the service. I guess I wouldn't be surprised, but maybe some CPAs or other individuals over here could tell me, but I guess I wouldn't be surprised if some of these devices are probably could be classified as medical deductions because that's basically what they're used for. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions? All those in favor of Senator Ron Flatern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 100, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 100 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 155. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 155, Burn Order Violation Restitution, sponsored by Representative Semlick, an act relating to penalties for violating fire bans. It was referred to Committee number 5, Agriculture, State Public Lands and Water Resources, who recurred back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks. Excuse, Senator Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move the House Bill 155 do pass, and we also have a standing committee amendment I'd like to have read in right now.
House Bill 155, standing committee amendment number 1 to engross copy. Page 1, line 1.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, I would move standing commitment number 1 to House Bill 155, and I'm going to yield the floor to Senator Cooper to explain the bill and the amendment.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'll go ahead and go through the bill and the amendment at the same time, and then I'll ask for a vote on the amendment when I get done here for this first part. Mr. Chairman, this is the Burn Order Violation Restitution Bill. And what this does, Mr. Chairman, it's an act relating to the penalties for violating fire bans. And in the amendment, we changed that word to restrictions, and that's part of the amendment. Somebody thought that was a better word rather than bans. And increasing penalties for entry into or use of any area closed by a board of county commissioners because of extreme fire danger. So there's two parts here you want to keep in mind as we go through this bill, and that is the fact that this bill says that if there is a restriction placed on fires by the county commissioners for extreme fire danger, that's when this law will cut in. And that requiring restitution for firefighting services necessary to respond to incidents caused by persons violating a fire. And again, we changed the word from ban to restrictions, which is a part of the amendment. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does, looking down in Section 1 here, it amends 359304, illegal entry or use, and I'll just kind of go through that first part, and then starting on line 16, you can see there's just been a little bit of wordsmithing there. They just changed the words such violation of this act shall be, and they change it from act to the word article. Then after that, on the continuation of line 16, the bottom page 1, and shall be, moving up to page, the top page 2, shall be punished. Well, they changed that to the word punishable. They thought that was a little more wordsmithing. By a fire or not to exceed, it was $100. That's been increased now in this amendment and this bill to $750 from $100. And then it says on line 3, or imprisonment in the county jail, and that was changed because sometimes you might be put into the local town jail, of course, rather than just the county jail. So they just left that as imprisonment and struck the words county jail. For not to exceed 30 days, then that was been increased now in this bill. Instead of 30 days to 6 months, or both. And then at the end, you can see they struck out fine or imprisonment because that was just duplication of the wording of the word both. Moving into the next section, Mr. Chairman, in section a little B, this is all new language in this bill. So I'll just go through that, read through that, because there's just to kind of point out some of the wording and what it means here. So it says, starting on line 7, this is on line 7, page 2, in addition to the penalties under subsection A of this section, if the person convicted, and it, now you notice it says intentionally, keep that in word, intentionally causes a fire in violation of an order, which means that the county commissioners would have had an order in place to, or a fire ban, in other words, issued under this article requiring response by a paid or voluntary firefighting unit. What that means is that is not like a U.S. Forest Service firefighting unit or a BLM hotshot crew or something like that. This is just strictly for paid or local firefighting units. And we'll clarify a little bit more. Firefighting unit, the courts and shall, they in the amendment, they've taken the word shall out there and put the word may in, order the person to pay restitution to the, and it used to say governmental entity, and now that's been changed to local fire service, meaning relating back to what I told you, this is just for local fire services only. Okay, moving on line 12 and on down 13, restitution ordered under this subsection shall be for all or part of the value of the services rendered by the responding firefighting units. The court may consult with the state forester to ascertain the reasonable value of services. The court shall not order restitution if the court finds that the person convicted has no ability to currently pay restitution, and there is no reasonable probability that the person convicted shall be able to pay restitution in the future. The monies collected under this subsection shall be paid to the fire suppression accounts of the, and then the word governmental entities was now changed in the amendment to say local fire services, that responded to the incident proportionately determined by the court and shall only be used for firefighting purposes. And Mr. Chairman, that I've explained the amendments, which are fairly just mostly changing a few words in here. So if I could have a vote on the amendment at this time, the standing committee amendment.
Questions on the standing committee amendment? All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion to adopt the standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 155, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The standing committee amendment has passed. We're back on the bill, Senator Cooper.
Mr. Chairman, now that has explained the bill and the amendment, and stand for questions.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, these bills and this particular bill gives me great concern, and for all of you, you know, I don't mean to take you to law school 101, but this is an anti-Boy Scout bill, and this is why. When we make crimes, we have an element called scienter, and that is the intent to do something bad, the intent to violate a particular regulation. If you look at lines 8 through 10, all that's required is that you intentionally set a fire. If you go up and set up a campfire, you intentionally set it. If you light your, flick your Bic out there, that's an intentional lighting. That's an intentional lighting. It says in violation of an order, there's no requirement that you know that the order is in place. Ordinarily, we'd say, you know, if you're out there and you know that there's a ban and then you go ahead and violate the ban, that's called scienter. That is called a knowing, a reckless violation of it, something that you know about. And this is what we call strict liability. All you have to do is set a fire in an area that's got a ban, whether you knew it or not, and you're going to pay for the fees. And the Boy Scouts of America in Utah had a similar situation. It was a negligence there, and they got a verdict again, or the federal government went out them for everything they were worth. Now, if that's what we want to do, that's what you can do. And if that's what you want to put them out of business, but there, you know, you, for those of you that have worked with Boy Scouts and gone up at camps, you don't always know where those boundaries are. But this one, by gosh, if you're thinking you're doing the right thing and you make a mistake and there's a ban there you didn't know about, or maybe you're up camping and the violation took, or they did a shut, you have a group of kids up there and they do a, county commissioners put an order Friday night, Saturday morning, you haven't even heard about it. You intentionally set the fire the next morning and it blows out of control.
you didn't even know about the order, and you just violated the law, and now you've got to pay all these bills. With respect, you might have even been careful. There's no scienter required to force this crime. And if you want to shut down those groups and say, hey, you take a group of kids, you better call the county commissioners first and tell the county commissioners to call you if they put an order if you're out there with your kids.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, and I guess I haven't read all of the acts, I mean, all of the statutes that's in this, but I just have some questions about illegal entry and use, because a lot of times in our area, they'll do a countywide ban. And so, you know, every piece of private property is basically restricted from their use. And it's kind of frustrating sometimes when you're in an irrigated area and there's absolutely no chance of a fire getting out of control, where really the ban should have been for grasslands, but it's too hard for them to designate township and range and sections and grasslands, so they just, with a broad brush, just sweep it through. But I'm kind of wondering what in what part of the statute, if you could point me toward it, that defines area. Is that just the area in which the county commissioners ban the fire, or is it specific areas? And maybe give me some clarification on that. And then is there any place in this statute that allows you to go to your local fire department and say, can I do a controlled burn? And whether there's any gray areas in the statute, if you could point me toward those, I'd appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'll start in respect to the great speaker in the back. I'm no Boy Scout. But this goes far beyond Boy Scouts, people. We just had an example of what this just deals with, except that the ban wasn't enacted in Jackson. And, you know, if you start a fire in violation of this ban for any reason, they come after every asset you have. The way this bill's written, if one of my kids starts a fire and they find that we're liable for it, you don't have a ranch anymore if you got a $20 million fire. We talked about this in committee, and we'll bring some stuff to work on that a little bit. But it's got to be really careful. And back to the good senator downstream, you're correct. Our county routinely bans fires in the entire county. I got to go to court a few years ago over exactly what you're talking about. We got 3 inches of rain, and I burned my dump, which sits in the middle of a center pivot, and had a dozen fire trucks respond to it. Under this bill, I'd have probably paid around $3,000 or $4,000 for them to come. We called the sheriff's office. They got stuck. We had to pull them out with a tractor. They got stuck going to put the fire out. This deal, as written, does not work. Maybe we can move it down and get it where it does work. But the way it is now, it's an open-ended deal. It also is a great fundraising tool for your local fire department, because every time they see smoke and they come running, they're going to bill somebody for it if they had an open flame to do it. And I got no problem paying for reasonable cost if you're there. But to have an open-ended deal, if a fire blows up and gets away and they take away your home, your car, and everything you own because a fire got away, doesn't make sense. So if we don't amend this, I encourage that we defeat it.
Senator Meyer.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And while we're talking about fires, you know, folks, we had a couple up in that, I think, that Western County range that I'm not sure whether a ban was in place or not, but there's a couple of large companies that started a couple of huge fires that cost, you know, in the millions of dollars. And the county commissioners are pretty, not the county commissioners, the county prosecutors are pretty much stuck on the line as to whether or not they want to prosecute and try to get anything out of these folks. And, you know, it seems like we're letting these multi-million dollar companies off the hook, and we're going after the Boy Scouts in this thing and the ranchers. You know, there's got to be some balance in this thing someplace. I'm not so sure that You know, these are issues that we need to talk about, but maybe they'd best be talked about in an interim committee where they could get all the issues on the table and come up with something that actually works.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, there is a couple of the Committee of the Whole amendments. Could we have the Committee of the Whole Amendment number one read in?
We can.
House Bill 155, Committee of the Whole Amendment number one to engrossed copy, page one, line six.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, Committee of the Whole Amendment number one to House Bill 155. This is exactly some of the concerns that were articulated by the good senator from Goshen County. I try to address in this minute this amendment. It brings in a new subsection C, and I'm not going to read it, but basically it provides an exemption. What the exemption does is if you intentionally start a fire and there's a fire ban out there, it's on your property and it never leaves your property, and you never call for suppression of your local fire services, then you're basically exempt underneath this act. And it gets to some of the issues that I think the good senator from Goshen County was talking about and the senator from Black Hills. If you're burning on your private property, and I think also the senator from Albany County, a lot of times when we deal with some of the size of the counties we have, you may not know for a week whether a ban is on or off. And if you're doing normal activities like burning your garbage or burning your ditches or in some cases burning fields, or in other cases you're burning piles of residue, or you pushed over an old barn, and you intentionally lit this, it doesn't run off your property and it doesn't do any damage, but yet the local fire hook and ladder crowd runs in there and they want to extinguish it, you're going to have to pay them. What this amendment does is basically says if you knowingly start a fire on your private property, it doesn't escape and cause damage to anybody else's property. And as long as you extinguish it or it goes out naturally and you don't call for assistance, you're not liable under this act. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would ask for a favorable consideration on this amendment and then vote the bill down.
Senator Cooper.
Mr. Chairman, I really have a problem with this amendment. First of all, I guess I would ask the question, why in the heck would you be having a fire burning when there's a fire ban on in your county? I mean, there is a reason for county commissioners to declare fire restrictions in a county, because there's in danger of burning the whole county down, and you need to have some sort of ability to stop that, and that's what these laws are all about. Now, I guess if you want to take that away from them, have that ability, then that's another issue for another day, I guess. But also, if you have a fire, and you're burning it at a time when you're not supposed to be burning it, when there's a restriction going on in your county. So what do? You call it. So somebody, the neighbor gets worried because you're burning a fire. They call the fire department out because they worried that this is going to burn over onto their property. Now, so what are they supposed to do? Are the firemen supposed to just sit there and wait until it crosses over the line from your property to theirs? And, oh, my Lord, now we're going to burn my house down. I don't know what kind of thinking that is. I don't know. And so I would really have a problem with this amendment. I don't know what we would do with it.
Senator Meyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll tell you what kind of thinking it is. First of all, I think it's right thinking, Mr. Chairman, because these are our private property rights, and basically you have a governmental taking about one of the things that you can do, and that's in the management of your property. And I'll give you a specific example, and this has happened to me more than once, is that we have a common practice that we're going to rotate winter wheat into alfalfa. And the common practice of that is to burn the wheat stubble off so we don't have to put in about $50 an acre in diesel fuel working that stuff down and flattening it out so the land will blow away. But if we can go out there, disc a fire guard around it, and we've got a situation there where you've got 4 miles in any direction of irrigated pivots running, and you take a nice still day and you do it when you should, you don't have a problem whatsoever. We call up the local fire department and say, okay, we're going to do a burn, and And one day we could do that. The next day the county says, no, you can't do that. And so then you're stuck there saying, okay, well, what do I do? Do I use my crop rotation where I wanted to? Or do I let the county commissioners tell me I can't plant alfalfa? Or I'm going to spend another $50 an acre, and then I'm going to get into a situation where I probably can't get a stand because in that light soil, it's all going to blow away anyway. But if I can strike a match, I got some burned out stubble, I can plant right into it, and I don't have a problem. I hit the button on the circle, and I've got a nice alfalfa stand. But the county commissioners, just like that, have done it to me twice in the last 15 years, where basically I've had to change my whole operation because the county commissioners, in their infinite wisdom, put one broad stroke across the whole county and said, no more fires. You know, now, I think the amendment in this situation here says that if I do that and it jumps out there and gets in my neighbor's pasture, I got to pay him for that grass. And I got to pay the local firefighters for fighting that grass fire. And that's the risk I bear. But I know that I can do it safely, and I could call up my local volunteer fire people, and I always give my local volunteer fire people plenty of money to make sure that they can fight fires for me and anybody else. You know, so the situation is, that's exactly what the thinking is that county commissioners don't know what's going on every piece of ground across the county. And the guy that owns his land knows what's going on and knows his neighbors and knows his local fire people and can work with them. And that this allows that flexibility.
Senator Cooper.
Mr. Chairman, well, first of all, if you go to your, if there's a fire ban or restriction on it, and if you go to your county fire warden and you explain to him or her what you would like to do and how you would like to proceed to maybe do a burn like this, you actually can get permission to do that from them. But you have to explain to them that, hey, you're not going to burn the county down by doing this. There has to be some precautions. There's a reason for putting these restrictions on. And if the wind is blowing 130 miles an hour, like it does in Wyoming a lot, and everything around you is completely dried out, how would you think the warden would feel or commissioners would feel if they let you burn down half the county? I mean, it's not very, very pleasant feeling. And so that's what this is all about. You can actually get permission from the county fire warden to do certain types of burns and to be able to set certain types of fires if you just work it out with them, and they'll allow you to do that.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, let's deal with the reality of a county fire warden and a county the size of Carbon County. He lives on one side of the Continental Divide. I've got a ranch on the other side. We've got a fire season on, so he's running around someplace. You can't ever find these guys when it's those kind of conditions. Do I really, really need to call the fire warden to get a permit to burn my garbage? Because that's what we're saying here, is if you want to go light and go burn your garbage out of your burn barrel, I've got to spend a couple of days trying to track down an appointed bureaucrat to find out whether I can burn my garbage or not. I mean, that's at the very simplest level is what we're talking about. We're saying the risk still lies with the landowner if they choose to exercise that risk to light that fire, whether it's burning garbage or burning ditch or burning the stubble off a field, says they can do it. But they still are at risk if that jumps off their property. It just takes that bureaucratic process out and lets a guy utilize his private property and a little discretion for how he wants to use his property on his own. And that's all that amendment does.
I'll be just a minute.
Senator Cooper.
Honest. Mr. Chairman, if you know how a burn or a ban is, restrictions are put in place by a commission, the way it's done is it is advertised. It's advertised in the paper, usually. Sometimes it's put on the radio. It's posted downtown, whatever. And there is a list of restrictions and all the things you can do and can't do. And I know one of the things that they usually allow you to do, if you have a closed container to burn your trash, you're generally allowed to do it. It lists all the things you can do and can't do, and it lists the number for you to call and who to contact and who to talk to if you need a special situation in a burn. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would ask you to vote against the amendment.
All those in favor of Senator Hicks's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 155, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 has passed. We are back on House Bill 155. Senator Driscoll.
Chairman, there's another Committee of the Whole Amendment. I'd ask for it to be read in, please.
Would the reading clerk please read in the second amendment?
House Bill 155, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 to engross copy, page 2, line 21.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I would move for adoption of House Bill 155, Amendment number 2, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2, please. This amendment goes on. I won't even tell you much about it other than it says the most that you can be fined under this section is $10,000. So if you do happen to start one of these, if you're the Boy Scouts or whatever, you can probably have enough bake sales or do whatever. If you're a rancher, it's not going to take your ranch away. Because the other thing I will tell you on this, this is a law when you do this. And when you violate that burn ban, your ranch insurance policy is null and void. It will not pay a dime to help you out. So unless you've got this in place, you're still in big, big trouble when she comes by. And inadvertent consequences of these bills are sad. And if you don't want your neighbor to lose his house or your friend to lose his ranch or the Boy Scouts to lose their ability to be able to go somewhere, I'd suggest you consider this amendment strongly. Thank you.
Questions, comments on the amendment? Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against this amendment. Folks, with respect to this item, this is not a fine. This is restitution. And if you happen to do a controlled burn and you burn your neighbor's house, it's not uncommon for the court to say, hey, you got to pay the house, and then that restitution order goes to the insurance company and gets paid. And it's, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, folks. I mean, the assumption is that the court now cannot require restitution of all the damages. In fact, and by the way, I can think of the largest damages that I know recently are the federal controlled burns burning on and burning down cabins and houses. You say, well, your liability is limited to 10, or your restitution obligation is limited to 10. Hey, if you'd caused it and you find yourself in front of the court, you ought to be required to do the full restitution under certain circumstances. So you're saying, well, it's a great bill, but only up to $10,000.
Let's go to Senator Scott next. Back to you, Senator, so a little later.
Mr. Chairman, as I read this amendment, this applies just to the subsection B, and it's restitution to the governmental entity. Has nothing to do with damages to any private individual that may be involved. It's just restitution to the governmental entity. And that's a much different proposition, and I think a much better proposition, because you certainly can have some overreaction.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Driscoll's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 to House Bill 155, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 to House Bill 155 has passed. We are back on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 155, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please rise. Those opposed, please rise. House Bill 155 has failed a voice vote pursuant to Senate Resolution 6-5, having failed a standing division vote. A roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
No.
Anderson District 28?
Yes.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
No.
Hines? Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Glanflatern?
No.
President Ross?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 10 ayes, 20 noes.
House Bill 155, having failed a roll call vote pursuant to Senate Resolution 6-5, paragraph A, is deemed indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 248. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 248, State Building Commission Staffing, sponsored by Representative Bob Nicholas, an act relating to the administration of government. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstetter, Hastert, Meyer, excuse, Perkins, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the...
When the committee whole rise reported do so with a recommendation that House Bill 248 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and to explain this good little House bill, I'll yield to Senator Perkins.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Senator, or excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, what you've got before is a nice little bill. That what this bill does is it conforms current practice with brings the current practice in under the statute. This is a practice that's been going on for a while. It works very good. It works very well, and so we come to you with this bill to make it official. What this bill does is excludes from agencies the University of Wyoming and community college districts and school districts, and does not include the Department of Transportation. Then what we do is we take the manager of construction management program within the division, I believe, of A&I. And anyway, what we do with them is it functions as the Secretary of the State Building Commission. And then also, you see in the middle of page 2, lines 13 through 16, they will also provide, that enables the division to provide appropriate program staff of the division to serve as staff to the Senate Building Commission in carrying out the duties of the division. And so what we've got is an opportunity to, conform that with statute. It's worked very well for a number of years now. And it helps keep the Building Commission coincided with the Construction Management Division of A&I. And with that, if stand for any questions, there are no questions, I'd call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 248, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 248 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 95. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 95, Railroad Crossings On-Track Vehicles, sponsored by Representative Blake, an act relating to public safety.
I believe that's House Bill 95.
House Bill. Referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Esquibel, Landon, Schiffer, and Von Platern. Senator Von Platern, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Von Platern?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a do pass on House Bill 95. There is a standing committee, a Committee of the Whole amendment I'd like read in at this time.
House Bill 95, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 3.
Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With your permission, I'll explain the bill and then fit the committee of the whole amendment as soon as I get to it. And on this bill, what we're adding is on-track or other on-track equipment. Presently, when you come to a railroad crossing and the arms are down or the signals are going off and you see the train normally or you think you stop, you don't see a train. A lot of people proceed or go around the arms. Right now, if it happens to be down because it's an on-track or other on-track equipment, maintenance equipment, basically, pick up with those steel wheels that they can ride the tracks with or some of the repair equipment. Right now, there is nothing in statute that actually can arrest you. Well, you can be arrested for going through the signals, but you can't be. They can't add this on there if there was no train available. So what we're doing is saying those signals stand for not only a train but other on-track equipment. So on page 2, line 6, we add to railroad sign or signal means any sign, signal, or device directed by authority or the approach of a railroad train or other on-track equipment. And that's what goes through the whole bill is to add or other on-track equipment. You'll see that on page 2, three different paragraphs. And then on page 3 is where the Committee of the Whole Amendment comes in.
Senator, would you move that amendment for us, please?
I didn't move the amendment. Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 95. And that fits in right on line 3, page 3. After approaching, you strike the balance of that line and insert, a highway crossing emits an audible signal in accordance with Federal Railroad Administration requirements. This also puts us in conformity with the FRA, the Federal Railroad Administration, by inserting that language and deleting the 1,500 feet. So once again, we added or other on-track equipment. Several places, every place they talked about approaching trains and why you stop and what the visibility. We just added or other on-track equipment. That goes through the rest of the bill all the way down. These are all existing language, and we just added that into every page in the bill. And that's really all this bill does, sir, is, Mr. Chairman, is add other on-track equipment to every place we tell you you can't run into a train, you can't run into this equipment.
Question on the amendment has been called. All those in favor of Senator Von Flader's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 95, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Do I have a question on the bill?
Question on the bill.
Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Von Flader's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 95. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 95 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 215. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 215, State Investments for a Public Purpose, sponsored by Representative Patton, and Act Relating to State Investments. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Senators Case, Emmerich, Peterson, Von Flader, Senator Peterson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Let's go to the hood. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 215, State Investments for a Public Purpose. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'd ask for that to be read in at this time.
House Bill 215, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 1.
Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 215, and for further explanation of this good bill, I would turn the time over to our senator from Fremont County.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. Last bill on the day, I see, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is within the permanent funds of the state of Wyoming, and this bill is about permissible investments. And you can see that the bill covers two areas. Small section M is to promote economic development that the state treasurer may invest and keep invested, not to exceed, current language in law, is $600,000 of any state permanent funds, $600 million. Yeah, I forgot we got rich while I came down here. Of any state permanent funds through the purchase of industrial development bonds, Mr. Chairman. So it's all about industrial development bonds. The only part you see in the bill is part M, and in the $600,000 is lowered to $200,000. There I go again. Last bill of the day, Mr. Chairman. I've been voting no on the budget so long, I guess it just...
And you do know you're standing between us and those peanut butter...
$200 million, Mr. Chairman. That's what the bill does. It also allows the Treasurer's Office to adopt rules. And you can see those rules on lines 6 through 8. The State Treasurer may adopt rules as necessary to carry out the duties under this section, Mr. Chairman. And in N, there is another requirement. That's on line 20 on page 2. It says the State Treasurer shall not invest state funds for a specific public purpose authorized or directed by the legislature in excess of $1 billion. That's current law. And it's being lowered to $500 million, Mr. Chairman. So these are legislatively directed investments. They involve industrial development bonds, Mr. Chairman. And one of the reasons for bringing the bill, Mr. Chairman, is that we're not using this program to its full extent. There's talk about it being used in the future. But currently, in terms of the total category of this investment, we only have $90 million, Mr. Chairman, none of which are in the industrial development bonds. Now, Mr. Chairman, there are some proposals out there to nip away at it, $30 million proposals, et cetera, but nothing close to the $600 million that we had previously authorized. The bill takes it down to $200 million, Mr. Chairman, and then the overall total at $500 million. So it's $200 million within the category of industrial development bonds, within the category, $500 million within the total category of legislatively directed investments. Now, Mr. Chairman, it's important to note that the category of M, the industrial development bonds, is a subset of the category of N, which is our total cap of legislatively directed investments. So in the committee, we had an amendment, Mr. Chairman. The good chairman of the Revenue Committee moved that amendment, and I'd like to discuss that amendment, and I would ask you to vote no, Mr. Chairman, because what that amendment does is sort of throw the system out of whack, because what it would do is by the way, that originally was $100 million when it was down the hall, and it was raised to $200 million in that chamber, came over here at $200 million. The committee proposes this standing committee amendment to raise it to $400 million, which what you have to remember is there's still the cap down below of $500 million. See, I've got my millions down, Mr. Chairman. You guys got that? And the problem with the $500 million cap is that since we've already used $90 million, and then we would go under the amendment to $400 million in that one category of industrial development bonds, there's several other categories in the law. The list is farm loans, irrigation loans, joint powers loans, loan to Hot Springs Park, municipal assistance, reimbursement to counties for deferred taxes. The list goes on and on and on. And we would be squeezing that down to only having, really, if you think about it, $10 million available. Because $10 million plus the $90 that's already invested plus the $400 million from the Standing Committee amendment gets you at the $500 million cap. That's probably not a very good balance. And that's why I would ask you to defeat the Standing Committee amendment and leave it at $200 million so that we have some room for these other programs. And if anybody would like a discussion, go to 94715, Permissible Investments, and you can see there's quite a list of things, not just these categories that are in this bill. Happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman. I've got my millions down.
We're on the Standing Committee amendment to House Bill 215. Any questions, comments? Chairman Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My good colleague on revenue brings out the good point in our committee. It was a 5-0 vote, I might add, to make this change from 200 to 400 million, realizing afterwards that there was another figure down at the bottom of the page of this bill that would cause a problem. So we had a letter from the State Treasurer pointing that out. Out of the three bills that we've listened to in revenue this session, Mr. Chairman, two out of three ain't bad, and so I would agree with my good colleague from Fremont County and say, maybe we ought to ignore this vote no on this. amendment, and I might have my committee implode on me, but because it was a 5-0 vote, I think it's the right thing to do is to go back to $200 million and leave some space there for other loans besides these industrial development bonds.
Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 215, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Standing Committee Amendment has failed. Senator Case, we knocked that amendment down. We're back.
Somebody
we're back on the bill. Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 215, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 215 is passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion is carried. Mr. President.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 66, due pass amended. House Bill 128, due pass amended. House Bill 249, due pass amended. House Bill 72, due pass amended. House Bill 81, due pass amended. House Bill 86, due pass amended. House Bill 100, due pass. House Bill 155, failed to pass Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. House Bill 248, due pass. House Bill 95, due pass amended. And House Bill 215, due pass. Senator Landon, chairman.
I lost the chairman of the Committee of the Whole. Where are you? Senator Landon.
Mr. President, thank you. I would move adoption of Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried, and the report has been adopted. Messages from the House.
February the 13th, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message number 326. Third reading passed. Corrected copy. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 132, Silencers, Suppressors, and Automatic Weapons. Ayes 44, noes 14, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February the 13th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 334, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 79, Collection of Unpaid Wages. Ayes 44, noes 14, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February the 13th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 330, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill number 52, Workplace Safety Initiatives. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 0, noes 58, excused 2. The House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. February the 13th, House of Representatives, message number 332, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill 68, Life Resource Center. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 16, noes 42, excused 2. House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. February the 13th, 2013, House of Representatives, message number 335, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill 112, TIP distribution policies. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 6, noes 52, excused 2. House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. February the 13th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 331, conferees appointed, joint conference committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 52. The House conferees are Representative Lockhart, Chairman, Representative Burkhart, and Representative Lubnow. From the House of Representatives, message number 333, conferees appointed, joint conference committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 68. The House conferees are Representative Harvey, Chairman, Representative Filer, and Representative Green. From the House of Representatives, message number 336, conferees appointed, joint conference committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 112. The House conferees are Representative Madden, Chairman, Representative Goggle, and Representative Petrov. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Appointment of conference committees. Reference to House Bill 52, Workplace Safety Initiatives. Conference committee is Nicholas, Chairman, Hines, and Meyer. The conference committee, in reference to House Bill 68, Life Resource Center, are Scott, Chairman, Bebout, and Kraft. Conference committee with regards to House Bill 112, TIP distribution policies, is Christensen, Chairman, Perkins, and Nicholas. Signing of enrolled acts. Senate Enrolled Act 27, being original Senate File 19.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 27, being original Senate File 19, an act relating to special hospital districts.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 27, being original Senate File 19. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 28, being original Senate File 132.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 28, being original Senate File 132, and act relating to game and fish.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act, Senate Enrolled Act 28, being original Senate File 132. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 33, being original House Bill 11.
House Enrolled Act Number 33, being original House Bill 11, an act relating to insurance holding companies.
about to sign House Enrolled Act 33, being original House Bill 11. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 34, being original House Bill 78.
House Enrolled Act number 34, being original Bill 78, an act relating to administration of government.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 34, being original House Bill 78. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 35, being original House Bill 111.
House Enrolled Act number 35, being original House Bill 111, and act relating to taxation.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 35, being original House Bill 111. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 36, being original House Bill 116.
House Enrolled Act number 36, being original House Bill 116, and act relating to public lands.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 36, being original House Bill 116. I have so signed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Tuesday, February 14th. Folks, committee of the whole tomorrow, we're going to get through it. And so dress comfortably.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will be meeting tomorrow, Thursday at 12:30 in room S13 to consider the following re-referrals. House Bill 26, Appraisable Management Company Regulation. House Bill 91, Engross, Statewide Education Accountability Phase 1. House Bill 228, Engross, Transfer of Federal Land Study. House Bill 217, Atomic Energy Act Agreement State Study. And House Bill 163, Engross, Adjunct Professor Incentives.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow at 7:30 a.m., so it's a 7:30 start. We will take up the following bills: House Bill 18, Engross, Telecommunications, Internet Protocol-Enabled Services; House Bill 123, Restaurant Liquor Licenses Dispensing Rooms; House Bill 206, Exemption Water Utilities; and House Bill 187, Engross Campaign Finance. That'll be if time allows.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, thank you. Mr. President, tomorrow morning at 7:45, anybody that wants to go visit the state crime lab, meet over in the House Judiciary Committee. We're going to send all those folks out there, and we'll bring all the good people back. But it's a chance to – it is interesting to view that, the state crime lab. It's the new lab, and it's an interesting place to go visit. So if you want to see some sights, I encourage you to be in the House Judiciary at 7:45.
Senator Ron Flater.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs will meet as soon as you can get up there to S14 and no longer than 10 minutes to consider House Bill 235, Firefighters License Plates; House Bill 205, Engross, Motor Vehicle Weight Restrictions Exceptions; House Bill 229, Regulations of Natural Gas as a Transportation Fuel.
Further announcements? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion's carried. Senate stands adjourned until 10 a.m. Thursday, February 14th.